Off the ball.
Rugby.
We are such a minor sport here. We are competing against these giants. And the only thing we've got is the Wallabies. Because rugby league and AFL, they don't have someone wearing a gold jersey all the time.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back to Wednesday night's football show. If you're just joining us, you've missed John Anderson talking about the Alexander Isak situation. One of the reporters who's been covering this in great depth has been Craig Hope of the Daily Mail. Around 6 o'clock this evening, he published a piece on the Daily Mail talking about Tottenham potentially getting in on the act for Brentford's Johan Wissa. So the plot thickens. So Spurs considering offering Richarlison as part of the deal to bring in Eberechi Eze from Crystal Palace, and they would then make a move for Brentford's Johan Wissa. So they can reveal that Spurs are exploring part exchange in Richarlison plus cash for Eze. If that were to happen, Thomas Frank would want to be reunited with Wissa, who he signed for Brentford in 2021. However, sources insist that Wissa has his heart set on a move to Newcastle, who made an improved offer of 35 plus 5 million on Wednesday, and that's going to be rejected. So it feels that this has been a transfer window of dominoes. Like everything has had an equal reaction or pre-reaction. Like no one's allowed to leave until we have our house in order, sort of thing.
So you explained that very well. So you're saying Richarlison will go to Crystal Palace, not to Brentford. Brentford are just screwed completely here. Nothing happening. What's the final domino? Like I still wonder with Palace, and the expectation seems to be that Eze and Gehi will play in their European game again tomorrow night. But you would be shocked if Liverpool didn't go back for Gehi, and as you've just said, that if Eze doesn't end up at Spurs, is somebody going to go for Mateta? Like, the dominoes are really along the striker side of things. And what's the final domino? Like, part of me wonders, are we here, final night of the transfer window at 10 o'clock, and Brentford have just spent 30 million quid on Patrick Bamford?
Yeah.
Like, is that the end point of this?
It would be a good deadline
Who's the last striker remaining? And which club is the one that ends up completely screwed, that thought they were going to get the next guy in? That doesn't happen. It all gets delayed, and there's absolute panic mode. Look, we like to turn our noses up at it sometimes. It is a lot of fun.
It's been one of the all-time great transfer windows.
Right up there. Like, this is sort of a three-month-long version of the day that Manchester City were bought, and that brilliant Sky Sports yellow strap of Manchester City bid for Carlos Tevez, Lionel Messi, and was it Mesut Ozil was the other one?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was a great, great day of... That was the peak of Sky Sports News.
2013, is it?
No, 2000. This is 2008. This was the takeover, the initial takeover.
Oh,
so we're
sorry.
Going way back.
I always got confused between that and the Ozil to Arsenal day.
So that was a mad day. So there's some interesting signings. You've got to assume Isak is going to go. Then Wissa goes. They try and sign another one. Like, I do feel sorry for the likes of Wolves, who, like, all of these clubs are just getting eaten alive by those above them. And the pressure then that comes on the managers, we've seen it already this week with maybe understandable questions about Keith Andrews considering the lack of experience that's there. But we spend weeks since Keith Andrews have got the job saying, "Whoa, this is almost an impossible gig that he has," when they've lost all of their best players. The ones that are remaining, he doesn't even want to play. And then exactly what everyone predicts happens. Now look, the goals weren't great. There was definitely as he said himself, a naivety to the way they played. But like, some of these clubs are going to massively struggle because they've just lost all their best players and they're not going to be able to replace them.
It was interesting that Isak released a statement during the PFA Awards last night, just in case anybody was missing him. It's like...
I wondered on that. If you're Mo Salah, and you know, Mo, while he's increased his assist contribution massively, so there's no questions that he's not a team player, and... you know, is somebody who's very fond of his teammates and is happy that he can score the requisite amount of goals while other players score goals as well. If you're sitting there and you're about to be crowned Footballer of the Year for a record third time, and next thing, the guy who the club are going to bring in to ultimately succeed you in scoring all the goals over the next few years is stealing your thunder with this outrageous inflammatory statement. I don't know, is Mo not looking at that going, "Here, pal, Let's just settle down a minute now. Let me have my moment. There was a great moment at the PFA Awards, which I'm sure there's logistical reasons for this, that they have it the first Monday of the new season and everybody's back and available. And, well, with the exception of Alexander Isak, it's important that they have all the leading players there. It is very difficult when you're looking at the team of the year and you're like, did he play well last? That feels like a long... So wait, we're going to put William Saliba at right back in the team of the season? Like when we're looking back and you're trying to remember, you know, remember when Ireland used to have all the right backs on the team of the season for like about 6-7 years straight? Mm-hmm. We just always had the right back. That we're now looking going, William Saliba, did he have a season at right back for Arsenal? No, there was just nobody good enough in the entire league. Like that should be outlawed. It's completely biased against true right backs.
But who was the right back of the season last year?
Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jurrien Timber. Doesn't matter. You have to pick one of them. You can't just decide you're going to put William Saliba in there.
But he was in one of the best four defenders of the year.
But it's the team of the year. Every team has a right back. You got to stick a right back in there. Stick Matty Cash in there for all I care.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is a new futuristic version of football where right backs are no longer needed because Saliba is just so pacey he can break out from right centre back.
You're right in that. Where does that end? So, you know, they have Mo Salah, Alexander Isak and Chris Wood in their team. Like, that's just never going to work. So it doesn't need to be tactically maybe perfect. But again, I would have said, hey, footballers, when you're spending your 8 seconds thinking about this, you're going to have to decide between Chris Wood and Alexander Isak, and you're going to have to find somebody else to play on the left-hand side of the attack there.
On stage, you noticed, the internet noticed Declan an interesting
Rice was,
moment.
Declan Rice was talking about Arsenal's 3 second-place finishes in a row, and just as he says it, big smile came on Mo Salah's face. He was back smiling after the Isak incident by then. Big smile and a sort of knowing look over at Virgil van Dijk of, ha, this guy. That's all they're thinking about. That's what we did.
Was Ian Dowie there presenting that award at the time?
Was that Ian Dowie?
That's what Jonathan Northcroft. Brilliant PFA awards yesterday, where the highlights included this exchange of looks between Salah and Van Dijk, and Nitro from Gladiators on stage with Ian Dowie presenting an award together. I presume there must be a second Ian Dowie.
Why not? Ian Dowie is a...
I mean, he would have been a more suitable candidate.
Yeah, well, exactly. He's played football. It's the PFA awards. Why not?
Why not Ian Dowie?
Why not Ian Dowie? Who else? Who would you like to have seen? Alongside Nitro from Gladiators.
Yeah, another Gladiator, potentially. There could be further movement in the centre-forward market in the Premier League this season. The news on Kai Havertz for Arsenal is not good.
No, nothing confirmed as of yet, but all the murmurings out of Arsenal seem to be that Kai Havertz has a pretty serious knee injury and that they could have a problem in terms of backup for Victor Gyökeres. Gabriel Jesus, it seems, is a long way from returning from his ACL. We'll remember the good old days of last season. Stick Mikel Merino on your PFA team of the season in a false nine role. Why not just go with that? When Mikel Merino was having to step in when Kai Havertz, and Arsenal obviously feel Victor Gyökeres coming in means an end to all that and a proper number nine. But now they're one injury away from Mikel Merino having to be back in business again. So they may need to enter this crazy situation that has developed in the Premier League and look for somebody. You know, our good friends in Indy Kyla,
yep,
are saying that Rodrigo is sounding out Arsenal and Liverpool, keen to get out of Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But again, that's more left-hand sided move, but does that mean you could play him up top if needs be? You could stick Martinelli in up top? I don't know. It's going to get very messy, but...
What about Johan Wissa?
Jean-Philippe Mateta?
Jean-Philippe Mateta, yep.
Patrick Bamford,
and then but then Leeds need to get a replacement for Patrick Bamford.
But Leeds are already comfortable with Patrick Bamford leaving.
Okay,
so they're okay. So actually, that's the point. That actually, he's the one guy I think, you know, they'll eventually go, all right, we're happy to let you go, and he's going to fill a gap for somebody. But I don't know what Arsenal do in that scenario because they've obviously invested, you know, significantly in Gyökeres and expect him to be their main man for the next 4 or 5 years. And a lot of these sort of stopgap measures, I don't know if they've ever fully worked out for them in terms of just bringing in a Kai Havertz as a number two. Actually, we might need to use him sometimes. And then next thing, Gabriel Jesus is injured and you're changing your system and he has to be the guy who's getting you all the goals. So, you know, it doesn't feel like any of the young academy players who are coming through, and it looks like there's a lot of exciting ones, are a striker, are an out-and-out number nine. So it could add something into it if suddenly they thought, right, we need... Look what Liverpool have done. If they're bringing in Alexander Isak, they're going to have two world-class players playing in that position. But yeah, it's another little bit of a setback for Arsenal after, you know, starting the league with a win against Manchester United.
Arsenal will never have a reliable number nine again, it turns out. What we'll do is we'll take a quick break before we focus on Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers. Back after these.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20 years.
Released in 3 parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning. And to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
You have a right back of the season.
I'm going to go Ola Aina.
Okay.
I think that's who I went with originally when we did this at an appropriate time, which was the end of the season when all of this was fresh in our minds.
Yeah, fair enough. Ola Aina and his Ribena, probably the best partnership of the 2024-2025 season.
Sebastián Muñoz.
Muñoz could have been a good shout as well. But I mean, could Saliba actually just be a better right back than either of them if he were to play in that position?
Off with him.
Off with him. Let's talk a little bit about tomorrow night. Shamrock Rovers, Shelburne, both in massive European nights. We have Shelburne versus Linfield live on the radio tomorrow evening. It'll be yourself alongside Vinnie Perth watching this tomorrow.
Yeah, we've been here before. A bit of a mad scenario where Shelburne and Linfield are meeting for the second time, but the stakes are considerably higher this time around. The winner's guaranteed to play Conference League football. It'll be worth over 2 million if Shelburne progress. It'll bring them up towards 4 million in terms of prize money, but I think it'd be more the adventure that awaits over the winter, having seen the journey that Shamrock Rovers went on last season, that the opportunity that's there for Shelburne with a favourable draw, considering they've already beaten Linfield. I think it promises to be a pretty special night in Talca Park. Now, things have changed a little bit since they last met. What are we, just over a month ago? I was at Windsor Park for the second leg and I've almost had to refresh my memory on it, because often when you're there and you're talking to the players and the managers afterwards and like they'd got through and they progressed and there's a real sense of joy to that, you go, well, this was convincing. And the last half an hour was very comfortable. You remember Linfield had a player sent off and that sort of just killed the game. Linfield were in pre-season, they ran out of legs, and even though it was 1-1 on the night and 2-1 in aggregate, it was quite comfortable for Shelburne at the end. But the first 20 minutes of that game were insane, and Shelburne kept shooting themselves in the foot, and Linfield go in front, and Linfield were creating opportunities. And you just wonder, a month on, with more games under their belt, now they've only played one league game, because they've managed to get a couple of them called off to ease their path into Europe, and they've got themselves a new young striker who's scoring a lot of goals. So Kieran Ufford came off the bench a month ago in both the games. He's only 21. He's a Scottish striker who they've signed permanently from St Mirren, but he was on loan in the Irish League last year. Got into double figures for Crusaders. So he'd only just signed before those games. I think he got 10, 15 minutes in each of them. But since then, started every game, 5 goals in 5. Scored a cracker last week against Vikingur and played one league game and scored a hat-trick in that. So that's a very different threat. I think we saw the performance Chris Shields put in the second leg. Remember, having missed the first leg, where he looked for probably that first hour like the best player on the pitch. And then again, maybe that lack of fitness and that lack of pre-season fitness caught up with them. And there was only one goal in it. Now, Shelburne have got better and better since then as well. They seem, the signings they brought in seem to have settled in very quickly. They have a good depth to the squad. They're obviously playing a very high level of opposition since then, and the speed of those games and going up against the likes of a Carabag, you would have to feel suit them then when they come up against Linfield. But definitely the more I've thought about it and the more I've been looking at it ahead of the commentary, it doesn't feel as much of a sure thing. If it ever was, as when we first saw the draw, and it was either going to be a Linfield or a team from the Faroe Islands. But still, it's probably as good a draw as you could get for Shelburne for this sort of opportunity at the end of it.
They can't offer to give your man much space tomorrow night up front for Linfield. He's an exceptional striker.
They can't afford.
What is that?
You said offer.
Offered.
Offered. They can't offered. Okay.
The last couple of clashes against Rijeka, we haven't really delved too deep into their ridiculous lack of luck that they had in the second leg in particular to concede the goals that they did. Like, are we sure that Rijeka would have found another way to find the back of the net? The second goal in particular was one of the most extraordinary goals that has happened in an Irish fixture in Europe.
It does feel like a very Irish conversation that we've had with the international team as well, a habit of conceding spectacular goals from distance. And the Rijeka player, Fruk, who we had spoken about the night before, like, comes in and does exactly what everybody feared he might do and just runs the show completely, and he scores a cracker. And look, the frustration won't be those two goals because they got back into it and they're going to extra time and they've given themselves a chance and then they concede. Just a goal that seemed to come from a lack of concentration or... And again, maybe that is that Rijeka proving that actually they can just find a way to pick you apart as well. And that while they have the individual talent to score spectacular goals, their level was just slightly higher. But it was just such a short period where Shelburne had that belief of, ooh, if we get this to extra time, maybe this is a chance. And then, you know, you're guaranteed Conference League football. But when you look at particularly what Qarabag brought, the speed of that game, I think... Shelburne were a bit shell-shocked in the first half, and how could you not be, because they were just so technically good. We saw what happened with Pats and Besiktas, that, you know, you can sort of think that these guys may not be that far ahead, but then turns out, you know, they've played at the very top level of the game for a reason. That's not necessarily going to be the case tomorrow, and I think, I don't want to say it's a step down, but obviously Linfield don't have that quality of player. The speed of the game won't be the same. It'll be much more like a League of Ireland game in terms of the pace, and Shelburne are going to be very comfortable with that. And I think with the experience they've gained, you know, they should be looking to go and get the win, and maybe a win by a couple of goals. So we can hear from Joey O'Brien. He was up at Talca Park today, and I suppose the one thing that he's been pleased about is, as they've gone through these rounds, how the players have sort of embraced the different challenges and been able to step up generally to the differing qualities.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. And now it's about what got us here, and I suppose what got us here over the last year or so, whatever, it's been about performance and been about nailing our performances, and then when it matters, making sure you're able to step up. And I think we've done that as a group, and the lads have done that as a group of players, as a squad of players, and we really challenged at times throughout the last year or so, and even the last few weeks at times, in really tough European games, really stepped up in some monster performances that they've put in individually and collectively, from a squad point of view. And here again, that's the message about tomorrow night. It's about nailing your own performance and making sure you just focus on that. And after the game, you have no regrets.
It's obviously been quite a theme of the talk around Shelburne over the course of the summer, the financial importance of these games on them. Obviously, Sean Boyd and his comments from what it was two rounds ago about, you know, getting engaged and how important it is to get these bonuses so you can, you know, have a wedding, put down that deposit on a house. It's more important for a club of Shelburne stature than it is for a club of Premier League or other top leagues around Europe's stature.
Yeah, and it's something that the Linfield players will be, I'm sure, thinking about as well, in comparison to, as you say, a Qarabag, where your general wage is going to get you all of those things that you would expect to get when you're sort of in your mid to late 20s and you've had a good, successful career, whereas the financial side is massively important. I know Joey O'Brien was trying to stress that, oh, as footballers, you put all that stuff to the back of your mind. Again, Joey didn't have the career that these guys are having. Joey played for many, many years in the Premier League. Those things were probably taken for granted, whereas I think, understandably, the players, it won't be their primary focus. They'll want to go and, you know, have those experiences and maybe, you know, end up playing against a Crystal Palace or is it Fiorentina who are in from Italy this season, I think, you know, get one of those sort of games. But it is life-changing what could potentially happen. And again, you have to take that into account when we're talking about that sort of money of 4 million. Like, this isn't just 4 million by the end of it. You have to take your expenses out of that. They are massively weighted towards bonus structures around Europe. So a good chunk of that will go back to the players, to the management. But it all adds to what's going to be a really interesting night. Not a lot of talk about what was there in the first leg, about the sort of political angle of it and North v South or anything like that. There was a tasty but friendly atmosphere, it seems, up at Windsor Park for the second leg in particular. And, you know, there were very few Linfield supporters in Talca Park last time around. You know, maybe the one thing that might have changed it was when Shelburne won and the giant tricolour. Now, Paddy Barrett didn't go fully Graham Souness on it. Didn't bring the tricolour right into the centre of the pitch, but they had the tricolour front and centre, planting it in the ground at Windsor Park. So Joey O'Brien was asked about whether there might be any lingering after effects from that.
I don't think so, to be fair. I think going up there, coming off the pitch, I think their fans clapped us off as well. I think we didn't get too carried away. I remember obviously in the dressing room and stuff like that, there was nothing like that. I suppose that moment, the euphoria, that's what it's about, and that's what you play the game for. So I wasn't going to tell the lads to calm down. You put so much work and effort into it that when you win, you celebrate. Here, it's a bit like Rika here the other night. I mean, for me to start complaining about them celebrating around the noise they were making in their dressing room, for me, that's what football's about. It's about celebrating when you win and when you get through things. And here, I'm sure in 2 weeks' time, whoever gets through, David won't celebrate, and that's all that matters.
If anything, it's a compliment to Shelburne that Rijeka would celebrate in such ostentatious fashion.
But Joey O'Brien's a proper football man, isn't he? Like, you let him at it.
Yeah.
Let him at it. You wait for revenge next time. Also, there were, you know, maybe they just weren't ready to go for that fight again at full time.
Talk to us about Shamrock Rovers then. They've got a much more difficult path into the Conference League phase there in the Azores tomorrow night to play Santa Clara.
Yeah. Good long trek into the mid-Atlantic for a few hundred Shamrock Rovers supporters who I think were on the charter flight over with the team earlier today. This was probably the toughest possible draw that Shamrock Rovers could have had, a team to finish fifth in Portugal last year. Now, a team that are still well below the sort of traditional top four of Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, Porto, Braga. You know, they've been more of a yo-yo club than that. And actually, they've started this season with back-to-back defeats in the league. So maybe the form isn't great. They probably had the job done against Larne in the first leg, had a scoreless draw, so suddenly they're three without a win. And, you know, they've sort of picked up quite a few Brazilian players. There's a lot of different nationalities in the squad. But you do wonder, if you were to ever beat a Portuguese team, is this the one? That maybe with Shamrock Rovers being the team, with all of that European experience and all that they went through last season and over the last 4 or 5 years, regularly in Champions League qualifiers, is this the tie where all that experience stands to them? They're generally so strong at home. Away has been a bit of a problem performance-wise. Balkany away was really poor, and I think they were probably delighted to get back with just a 1-0 defeat, confident that they could do what they did, which was a really straightforward 4-0 win. And I think if they could come back with the tie still in the balance at 1-0, maybe even 2, that they would fancy their chances, probably getting a, you know, 10,000 out to Tala next Thursday night, of causing an absolutely massive upset. And Santa Clara, if we were thinking of great club results for Irish football, maybe the name isn't that attractive. But again, if you're talking about beating a team who's finished fifth in Portugal, it will be one of the shocks of the European season. Not helped by the fact that Conor Malley is injured. He's done really well in midfield since he came in from Sligo. Gives them a lot of energy in the middle to go with. Been a really good creative player. Obviously, the Jack Byrne situation, there's no sign of that being sorted out. Again, I don't know in these big games away from home whether Jack Byrne is going to be starting. I was sort of laughing last week when Stephen Bradley was talking about the top three players in the league being Matt Healy, Graham Burke and Dawson Devoy, so including one Bulls player, but then spoke at length about the brilliance of Graham Burke and then didn't pick him.
Yeah.
You know, do you go for a lot of legs? And I think that's what Matt Healy has offered. Darren Nugent can offer that. But it's unfortunate for Shamrock Rovers. The Champions route makes it an awful lot more straightforward, which is where Shelburne have gone. And next season, you'd expect Shamrock Rovers will be in that route again, but despite the fact they were, I think, the highest seeded team for the vast majority of the draws, yeah, it would still, I think, be a big upset if they were to come through this.
How many teams from Ireland are going to be in the league phase?
Just to contradict myself straight away, I think I think Shelburne will definitely get through.
Okay.
I haven't seen enough of Santa Clara to know whether or not the quality of the Portuguese league means if you finish fifth, you are several steps ahead of an Irish side. Maybe it does. But as I said, they've lost their first two league games. It was probably something of a surprise they finished that high last season. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had two, but I think we'll definitely have one.
Okay, Nathan, you will be there at Talca Park tomorrow evening for the first leg of Shelburne versus Linfield in the Conference League qualification playoff. We will chat to you then, 7 p.m. Cheers, we're on air. Tom Dunn is up next.